So styles tends to not only separate men, you know, because they have their own doctrines, and then the doctrine became the gospel truth, you know, that you cannot change, you know. And but if you do not have style, you just say, well, here I am, you know, as a human being, how can I express myself totally and completely?
I think our society is run by insane people for insane objects, objectives. If anybody can put on paper what our government and the American government, etc., and the Russian, Chinese, what they are actually trying to do, you know, and how what they think they're doing, I'd be very pleased to know what they think they're doing. I think they're all insane, you know, but I'm liable to be put away as insane for expressing that. You know, that's what's insane about it.
Evil contains within it the seeds of its own destruction. Watch that experience. Watch what happens to a person that becomes, who's evil and ruthless and negative. Just observe it. And you'll notice that this is in fact the case, and it's certainly the case of the fractal. Evil contains within it the seed of its own destruction. The moment that you take that kind of anti-human negative stance, you're just waving a red flag that nature will come and get me, which is exactly what's happening now. It's called the age of revealing and the age of awakening.
Gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Truth Warrior, broadcasting live here on TruthFrequencyRadio.com. And as always, I'm your host, David Whitehead, and I'm broadcasting to you live from Toronto, Canada. And tonight I have a very exciting show because it is none other than Man Talk Project Number 5. We've done four previous shows, which I thought were fantastic. It was great to share various opinions and different perspectives on this information from a man's perspective. And I've shared these shows with my good friend Vinny Eastwood, who's joining us again tonight from New Zealand. And of course, his website is thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. And my other guest is Randy Moggins, offplanetradio.com. And I'm going to bring both of them on right away because we have a lot of different things to discuss tonight. So, Randy and Vinny, welcome back, my friends. Good to have you on the show. Welcome.
Good evening. Hi, David.
Hey, Randy.
This is Randy for the audience.
Yeah, welcome. Welcome. And Vinny, you're there too, my friend?
Yes, I am indeed. This is Vinny Eastwood. Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question.
That's awesome. Well, welcome, guys. This is great. I'm glad, you know, I'm glad we do this. And well, for those that are kind of new to what we've been doing with this Man Talk project, it was an organic thing that sort of sprung on us, and we originally had a show that was scheduled on Vinny's show a while back, and we ended up being double booked, and it ended up being an awesome experience. We just sort of got on there and shot from the hip, and that's how it's been ever since. And we've done four previous shows. We sort of frequent each other's stations. We go on Vinny's show, and we go my show and Randy's show. So this is number five, guys, and I think it's been kind of getting some popularity, and it's just a great opportunity to chat with some other radio show hosts. Because I don't know about you guys. I mean, we get the opportunity to speak to a lot of different researchers and authors and professors and whistleblowers and all these different kinds of people. But when you get to talk to other radio show hosts who are doing the same thing, I find that they have a better objective perspective in many cases because they get to talk to so many different people and bring in so many different fields of thought and topics. So I don't know. I think this has been great. Tonight I want to do the same thing. I want to just keep it ad lib and whatever's on your guys' minds. If there's anything that sort of has been jumping at you lately in the news or anything exciting that's come your way in terms of guests or topics, feel free to bring it out throughout the show. We've got 2 hours ahead of us. And who knows, maybe even at some point I might even open up the phone lines and get some other people to call in and give us their opinion. We'll see how it goes. So welcome, guys. And Vinny, I want to start with you, my friend. What's been going on in your life these days? What's been exciting up in your neck of the woods?
Making a bit of music. Going to get married in January. And
there you go. It's a manly thing to do. There you go. Good job, man.
See, the conversation becomes instantly more expensive as soon as you realize that it's for a wedding.
Absolutely. Well, congrats.
And yes, it's going to be quite good. It's been a very long engagement, like 7 years or something. Yeah. You just never come up with the money. And then we realize that we're never going to come up with the money, so let's just get married free at like some kind of park or something and don't even tell the council about it, who require like a $275 fee. Processing fee to get married in a park where you're not going to disturb anything or inconvenience anybody or drink. You got to love Agenda 21, man. And this city's very, very, very into Agenda 21, especially out here in West Auckland in New Zealand, the little island chain slave paradise. It's quite gorgeous down here, you know, and it's starting to get all summery. So as all of you in the Northern Hemisphere are blistering cold while your bollocks to your toes, we're all sitting here hot as frack with the sweat dripping down the brow with incredibly sexy women walking around with miniskirts and stuff.
Oh, man, lucky you. It's absolutely freezing where I'm at in Canada. I don't know. How about you, Randy? How have things been going?
It's pretty freaking cold here. It's actually, I think we're going to get some snow tonight. And I'm on the east coast of the United States in Pennsylvania. So it's – hey, Vinny, congratulations. And, you know, in other times you would have had to have come up with, I guess, a dowry or something to marry this young lady. So – you know, the fact that marriage is not free doesn't mean that it's always been expensive.
Yeah, well, my missus is South African, so she's lucky she wasn't sold to a warlord.
Well, at least now she's going to have an exciting life ahead of her, being the wife of the one and only Vinnie Eastwood. That's going to be awesome. That's great, man. No, good for you. I remember when I got married, with my wife, we were together for... Man, we were together for 9 or so years prior to getting married. We did the whole living together before marriage. I know the Catholics are going to scream at me, but you know, I found that it was actually the smartest way to go. You get to know the person, you get to sort of hash it out, and you go through a bit of a growing phase together, and then you get married because you know that they're the right person for you. I kind of never understood the whole arranged marriages or, you know, just getting married because, well, we don't want to have sex before marriage. And of course, it's just the right thing to do because it's socially acceptable. I think that for me, it was a great experience to get to know, you know, my wife first. And then now we've got everything sort of, all the rules are laid out and all the gripes are behind us. And now we've just got, we've had a great experience since getting married. So that's just how it's been for me anyways.
Yeah. I think I'm kind of mirroring that effect.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Well, I think it's like relationships between men and women. It was quite funny. There was this one time I went to a big day out festival. And, you know, when you go to music festivals and it's in the summer and stuff like that, basically you're just bathing in eye candy the entire time, you know. Women all in the skimpy things in every direction you look. And things that rhyme with direction. And what you see all around you at all times is all of this temptation, all of this beauty. And you think to yourself, after seeing it the whole day, you know what? I've actually had enough. Like, I literally can't even enjoy looking at this anymore. There's just been too much of it. And I told my girlfriend about this in front of her mate, and her mate went, oh my God, I would never tell my girlfriend something like that. You know, so, well, then you've just not been in an honest relationship. And incidentally, her boyfriend was cheating on her and she didn't tell her about it.
Oh, yeah.
See, I'm brutally honest, and I think that's a good quality to have sometimes, maybe in private, because you don't want to be brutally honest in public, because then you get kind of in the dog box for long periods of time.
All the nasty emails that you get. As I'm sure we all get. No, that's good. Honesty is the key. That's the key to any relationship, in my opinion, is that if as long as when you get together with the person, you say, look, this is what I'm looking for. What are you looking for? Let's try to have a compromise. Let's try to meet in the middle. Let's try to work together. And even when you come up to those times where you have those little disagreements, those little arguments, you have to have, you know, you have to be able to negotiate. You have to be able to compromise and make sure that you're coming together on sort of an even playing field. And I think a lot of times that's where the disconnect happens for people. And I mean, yeah, we live in a world where the divorce rate is what, like above 50% now, and people are having difficulty.
Yes, I must say that that in a married, committed relationship, coming together is very important.
Oh, yes. Pause for applause there. That's awesome. So Randy, are you, I don't know if you mind me asking, but are you hooked up, my friend? Are you, you've taken the vows, or are you
a single man? Yeah, I've been married for a long time. Oh, yeah. Yeah, almost 30 years.
Wow, so you're the veteran. So Vinny, ask all your questions now. Get out of the way.
Okay, so how do you keep things connected? Because I found like when you've got a lot of work to do, and your missus needs your attention, you often say to her, no, sorry, baby, not now, I've got work to do. And then the later on never comes.
Yeah, you know what? The great dance is that you have to find ways to slot time in and out. And I was unbalanced. I was used to being on my own, which I had been since I was about 17. And I was used to a lot of, you know, downtime being, you know, basically I'm kind of a solitary person. And that was a real difficult adjustment for my wife to make because she's very social. She's used to being around people. And I would go off and read and I would go off and write and do all the creative stuff. And it took a lot of years for us to work out what that was like because, you know, that was my particular personality type, is that I withdraw, but people will take that as rejection. And every relationship and every different type of personality is different, but it's always a dance. And, you know, when you take those vows, and, you know, this isn't religious, you become one flesh. Well, in a sense, you become one soul. So then the struggle is to find the balance between the two souls. What does one need that you can provide and vice versa? And then it's less like a negotiation and more like a dance.
That's a good metaphor. I've definitely seen that. Finding that, hey, it actually fits in well with we were bringing up last time, talking about the whole masculine feminine thing. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily meaning that it is reflected just in the different sexes, but also, you know, if you're a balanced individual and you're matching up with another balanced individual, well, chances are you're going to be able to achieve balance. But what I think happens, and I've just experienced this in the past, and I've had a lot of friends that I've seen go through this, where you've got one person that has the intention of wanting to have that real connection and that intimacy and to do what it takes and go for the commitment. But then the other person is not meeting them at that point and they may not be balanced within themselves. So then, of course, the one person is, you know, putting more into it and constantly trying to work on it. And then it's lacking on the other side. And this is what ends up happening. And sometimes it's a back and forth thing. But I think in the end, it has to be an equal partnership where two empowered individuals get together and then become a couple. Otherwise, I don't know. It doesn't really seem to work out.
Yeah. I mean, a good relationship, a balanced relationship, doesn't work if one of the two people is selfish.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm looking for this. I'm looking for that. I want those. No. You're never going to have all your dreams fulfilled. Okay. Like a mate of mine, couldn't have had really any girl he was, but he's with this girl now and he's having a whole lot of fights and problems with her, and he's like, oh man, I'm not sure if I really want to be with her, and it's really tough and stuff. And just go, well, there's really only one important question, bro. Does she love you? He goes, what do you mean? I mean really, really love you. I'm talking about put up with all of your crap so far. And he goes, yeah, well, that's a good starting point. And there is no perfect girl. It's just perfect if she actually loves you enough to put up with your crap.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I think the biggest thing too, and if you've been with a person for a while, like David was talking about living together, you need to get past the romance to get to the love, because there's that whole rush thing, that emotional thing that happens, and it's good. It's all the glandular chemistry and all of the psychology that goes into creating romance, but everybody knows that doesn't last, and then you have to find how to deal with actually loving someone, which is an entirely different dynamic because it gets real, and you come under fire because you're dealing with day-to-day life, no matter what you do. And Vinny, I suspect you seem like you're a pretty easygoing guy, but at the same time, you're intense. And intense people will inevitably challenge the energy levels. And that's kind of the balances that you find with within a marriage dynamic.
Yeah, that's also what you found in Occupy, because there are a lot of people intense there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's a good point, Randy, because I think that's what happens to people, is that they're living in a society, and this is where we can bring in the whole society, the corruption of our modern society card, is that, you know, we're living in a society where everything happens fast. Everybody wants everything now. Fast food, you know, you want a song, you just download it on your iPhone, you can get it in seconds. You know, back in the day, remember we have to get the tapes, and you'd have to make a mixtape and then bring it to your girlfriend, and you didn't know whatever, she didn't like the song.
That was the best.
Yeah, you know, back in the
day. That was the best, making mixtapes.
The mixtape.
There's no romance in an MP3. What the hell, anybody can do that.
Yeah, but it happens quick. There's no reward for a long-term commitment in anything anymore. So when you see young people now and they're considering following the whole, oh, I want to fall in love and find that perfect person, because this is what all the music is about, right, is finding someone to complete you, whereas instead of trying to become a complete person and then join and combine energy with another complete person, that's not what's being sold. And now it's just about that quick gratification. Women are just objects. Men are just, you know, they're out there hunter gatherers. You got to tackle the gazelle. That's really the focus with these different polarities. But there's no reward for what someone like Vinny's trying to go for, which is, you know, a committed relationship where you're actually going to get intimately involved with another human being. That kind of stuff is just sort of glanced over.
Yep, it's not really a value anymore. Promiscuity is a citizen's duty. And I think that's out of Brave New World. If you stop people having these really in-depth, intense, reliable, honest relationships, you get to break up the family unit, and all the children grow up misadapted, as it were, because apparently you need that male and female energy around you when you were a child in order to imprint on. And if you've got a good mother and a good father, you're going to turn up into a good person, aren't you? You're not going to just suddenly, you know, fly off handle and turn into some sort of douchebag.
Well, chances
are. But being a good mother and being a good father doesn't mean that you're smart and you have a good career. It means you actually give a frack about people and you spend time with your children and try to actually raise them and teach them things. That sort of thing, I would imagine. Speaking of somebody who's not raised children at all, but...
Well, no, but if you have that as a starting point, and I mean, you might even hear her crying in the background there, but I'm a new father. I have a young daughter, and it's a totally different journey than just the whole getting together with another woman and getting married and falling in love and all that. There's that phase, and then bring in the fact that you're going to basically create a human being together and bring them in the world. If you're not balanced as a couple, as individuals, trying to bring another child into the world and be balanced as parents, that's a whole nother ball of wax. And I'm really grateful that I'm with the partner that I'm with, is because we've both been through thick and thin together. We know each other inside and out. She probably knows me better than I know myself. And we can really work well as a team together and have done well, in my opinion, so far. But for a lot of people out there, when I observe, and I get to see this a lot in my business, I observe different parenting styles. And even just different relationship styles. I see that, again, it comes down to the fact that the people that are raising children and that are entering into relationships are not complete people. They don't understand what it is to be a self, what it is to be a fully aware human being that is interacting with these different relationships on all these different levels. They're not equipped with that. They're not educated with that anymore. And maybe it has something to do with the fact that we don't really listen to the elderly generation anymore. You know, we just throw them in these old folks' homes, you know, well, which just what grandma and grandpa talk. They, nobody listens to them anymore. And so we don't really bring that wisdom into our realm of thought. And here we are. We're continuing to act like children, and now we have children raising children. I don't know. What do you think of all that?
Well, I think it's like when you take a copy of a copy of a copy, the image starts to get real bad. And that's what we've got now. We've got the image of society looking really blurry, really bad. Nobody knows anything anymore, you know? You go around and you try and ask children something, you know, who's this? You show them a picture of Jesus and they're like, who's this? Oh, that's Ronald McDonald. It's like, whoa, okay. So what's happening to the children nowadays? You got kids who started to eat at McDonald's when they were kids because their parents weren't that bright and maybe didn't realize that it was a soft kill bioweapon they were shoveling into their child's mouth. And then those children grow up, take their children to McDonald's. And before you know it, you've got a whole generation born in America that actually thinks that French fries are a type of vegetable.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, we actually had a U.S. president who told us that ketchup was a vegetable. That was Ronald Reagan, and of course he was confused because, well, whatever ketchup is, it comes from tomatoes somewhere in a food chain, and it's a fruit.
Or tomato powder or some kind of...
Tomato powder, yeah. It's probably been emulsified and compounded and pressed and distilled and everything else. I'll tell you, in July, we just saw the passing away of the last of our parents, that being me and my wife. For the last 15 years, my kids grew up in a house where there were three generations because her mother lived here with us. At one point, my father, after my mother died, lived here too. And so there was a continuity in the family, and families are not close anymore. Some of them don't talk to each other at all. Some of them hate each other, and maybe justifiably so, because there's now all of these dysfunctional family units out there that come from alcoholism and adultery and all of the woes to beset society. But when you have a family where you have generations under the same roof, the interactions are interesting because what's happening is you're beginning to build a history. Grandparents and children are an important link between generations. And this is actually the way tribal cultures function. David, you mentioned earlier about sending people off to homes. And my father lived with us for about 11 months before he passed away. And he had dementia. And this was not an easy thing. And I was advised by my brothers, don't do this, you'll regret it. And I was like, no, I'll never regret it. And I don't. It was the best 10 or 11 months of my life. And what we've lost in terms of relationships, in terms of the linkages between generations, is a tragedy because we've lost continuity in relationships between family members and generations. There's important concepts that were instilled in the human race in terms of interacting with each other generationally.
Part of that was about music as well, because I find a lot of people nowadays that are growing up are listening to Jimi Hendrix and The Doors and Pink Floyd and what have you, like their parents used to. And it's brought those generations kind of closer together, you know. If Roger Waters is touring, you know, a son can be taken by his dad to go and see him, you know. It's a multi-generational thing. But nowadays, instead of back in the 70s when a radio would go off with a song that everybody knew and people in a grocery store would all be singing it together kind of thing, you've now got all these different genres, all these different artists, and all these different access points of how to get them. So the music, instead of bringing people together, is now driving them apart into all these little splinter cells and off-shelter groups.
Well, that actually is part of the cultural diffusion. And, you know, you took genre and subgenre. And, I mean, I'm a huge music fan, and I will listen to any type of music, including hip-hop and things like that. But the diffusion has caused this started in the 60s, when my generation was growing up in the 60s and 70s. Rock music was still pretty outrageous. And what our parents didn't realize was that in 20 or 30 years it would become mainstream. But the rebellion and the long hair and all the things that went with that at the time were basically things that went against that generation. And so there was that, but now what you're saying is that this is like completely fracturing the sense of unity that music once held.
Yeah, pretty much. Because I was a lot of my friends are a lot older than I am, and you know, I try to tell them about some of the bands and things of that nature that are playing these days. They've got no idea, you know. Like, all the generations simply aren't keeping up with each other's music or what have you, you know. I'm sure there's plenty of teenagers that have never heard of Edith Piaf or Bing Crosby, you know, Nat King Cole. These are Little Richard, whatever. And
well, sorry to cut in there, guys. Speaking of music, the music's going to cut us off in a second there to go to break. So let's hold that thought. And folks, don't go anywhere. We'll be back with Vinnie Eastwood and Randy Moggins here on Truth Warrior. And we talk about music, family, marriage, and ketchup. We'll be following up on those subjects when we get back. Don't go anywhere. Everybody, Truth Warrior. I'm your host, David Whitehead, and I am here with two guests this evening, Randy Moggins from offplanetradio.com and Vinnie Eastwood from the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. And this is the Man Talk Project number 5, and we're still going strong, breaking down a bunch of different issues that affect us today in our modern society. It is, of course, a brave new world that we are venturing into. And we need some brave men to stand up and to start talking about these issues, which is why we got a couple of guys together to sort of have this round table and to break these issues down and to just give our opinion, because that's really what we can do. We can contribute our opinion, we can contribute our thoughts, and we can start having these conversations and talk a little bit more about the real issues that affect us all and not just a bunch of everyday minutia that doesn't really mean anything to anybody, which is what you pretty much get out of your television or a regular everyday mainstream radio show. So this is what makes us different, and that's why we're here doing it. So welcome back, gentlemen. We were just speaking about music and the sort of positive, negative effects of the different varieties of music that people are subjected to, and I do agree with both of you that the type of music that kids are listening to today, when you think back to our parents' generation and their parents' generation, it's completely different, and it seems to be a lot, it's very sparse out there in terms of music that's inspiring the soul, that's waking up the inner artist, that's inspiring the expression of who you are and going out there. And expression can be many things. I mean, I think that, yeah, whether it's hip-hop or hard rock or heavy metal or classical or any style of music, it's going to bring out a variety of different emotions in you. And I think it's important that we express all of those different emotions. A lot of people would say, oh, don't listen to that heavy metal rock music because it's going to make you into a negative person and you're going to start being influenced that way. When the reality is that that's a part, it's a venting process. It's a way of processing those emotions that we all have. We all have anger. We all have jealousy. We all feel those moments of rage. And if we just repress those things and not find a healthy way to express that and to deal with that, then it just pents up inside, and then that's when you just go out there and you unleash it on somebody when that, maybe you could have not done that had you been able to express it. So let's continue with that. Let's continue with that.
That explains all those YouTube comment sections. Have you noticed that people like completely lose their mind as soon as they're able to make YouTube comments?
Yeah. Maybe that's all it is. It's just a healthy venting process.
Yeah, just this totally out of control aggression just coming out of every pore, out of every orifice, you know.
I had no idea. I had no idea they had built so many bridges, because I have never seen so many trolls as I've seen on YouTube comments. Even on my site, it's unbelievable, the negativity level. It's like, is this some kind of virus?
I think it really is some kind of infection, you know? These are very sick people. You know, some of them are just crazy, like totally crazy. And I've got friends who look at these kind of things and go, oh my God, what is going through their head? I just don't understand it. And I say, well, because there's only one way you can understand it, is if you go just as crazy as they do by trying to understand it, all right? That's what happens when you try to understand insanity. You become nuts. I say, don't bother. Use the block key for the function in which it was intended. To keep stupid-ass motherfrackers the frack off my YouTube comment sections.
I think it's real easy to sit there, especially when you have anonymity, which is the greatest curse of the internet is anonymity. And yet, at the same time, I'm not a big fan on invading people's private space. But you, all three of us on this call tonight, are creators, we're producers, we put stuff out there. And most people have no idea how much work it is to do a talk show. They think you just open up a mic and talk. Well, sometimes you do, but if you do that often enough, your show's really not going to be very good. So we do a lot of wet work, we do a lot of mental work, we do a lot of research, a lot of checking things out, and then the art of getting on the air and putting something together on a regular basis is a lot of endeavor, a lot of work. And so you put your stuff out on YouTube, which we all do, and inevitably what we draw are people who have no concept of what it takes to do this or no concept of what it is like to put quality content out. They're just simply there to rip you a new one.
Yeah, it's always easy to snipe people and to just go out there and, you know, like you said, with that anonymity, to be able to sit there and write whatever you feel at the time. A lot of these guys are young kids, let's be honest. I mean, they have no idea. And if they are somebody that has done even a couple minutes of research in these things, it probably doesn't go farther than that, than a couple minutes. And you can tell by the way that they address you. Because I think if you have a legitimate argument to make that is backed by facts and evidence and you have information to share, there's no reason for you to get all hateful and start calling names and start attacking and criticizing the person. I find that usually that's how you tell, is when they start attacking your personality, they start attacking whatever little thing that they can think of. That's what bullies in high school are all about. That's what bullies in general are all about, is that they don't have anything to bring forward to you. They really have zero thought into the topics that we're bringing up. They just want to go out there and, you know, knock the chip off your shoulder type of thing. That's all they're really looking for. They're looking for a fight most of the time.
Well, it's a reptilian brain response kind of thing. You know, that part down in your cortex that governs your fight or flight responses. You ever yelled at somebody and you suddenly cross yourself and you go, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to say that. You know, like something that if you had perhaps taken 10 seconds and a few deep breaths, you might not have said. I think we've all done that. That's a reptilian brain response. That's something without thinking, your body just instantly reacts. Have a look at these comments. You can tell that this person is sitting there furiously typing down these comments. No thought process, just spite and abuse and fight or flight brain reaction.
And usually a lot of spelling mistakes and errors and stuff because of how frivolously they were sitting there and fervently writing all of this stuff out. It's a good point to bring
up. Spelling? Spelling still counts? I think the culture of text ended that.
Yeah,
I'm appalled at spelling, even from people who write blogs. I guess this is my professional editor background coming out, but it's like I look at the way people are writing now, and I think, the language is in serious danger in terms of writing skills.
It's new to
sad.
It's really sad when people can't demonize you using correct syntax.
That's exactly like, right.
Like, there was this big hit piece written about me the other day, right? And I was just running through every second line. There's a full stop missing or capital letters where there should be none. And it was just appalling grammar. You're like, bro, come on. I mean, at least try and accuse me of things that didn't happen, like, intellectually.
Or it's all caps. That's the best one. It's just like someone shouting at you just in all caps. That's always – I always love those ones.
You're a shill. You're a shill.
Do you read messages – and this is – I'm just tossing this out because I've done this now for 10 years. And I got so good at reading emails because I scan my emails. And some, you know, I get like two lines in and I go, nah, I don't think so. That when I read emails, sometimes I actually get like a picture of what this person's like, just based on, I don't know what this is, but more times than not, I'm correct if I have repeated exchanges with somebody that their voice in writing actually tends to come through somehow. It's the weirdest thing in the world.
No, it's true. It's true. I remember this one time a while back, somebody emailed me and said, "Video, I love you. You're so awesome. Oh my God, your show's the best or whatever." And I was like, I don't really want to email this person back. So, of course, I email them back and say, look, you know, it's really not good to be that happy and obsessed and totally into my show, you know? I mean, a lot of people have done it before, and then as soon as you say something that they don't like, they become your worst enemy all of a sudden. And this person didn't, and so naturally this person didn't like what I said and then became my worst enemy. I just shouldn't have said anything. It's just, yeah, you can freaking size people up, man, because our culture is now so controlled that it's like we're going down different chutes. You know, we all start at the top as we come out of this birth canal, but then there's all these different possible shoots and ways to turn out. Well, the unfortunate thing is there's big, big catches in a lot of these shoots for douchebag, scumbag, idiot, unthinking, vacuous tramp. You know, those shoots are really big, and there's really tiny little shoots for awesome dude, nice woman, kind, friendly person.
Oh, totally. And like we said before, this is just coming from a lot of people that are – they're threatened ultimately by the information that you're putting out, and they're threatened by your confidence, and they're threatened by your success, and they're threatened in every way. And that's what brings out that anger, because I always say if you're going to bring up a legitimate argument, you don't need to get all tied up in knots over it. It really – if you seriously have a serious a different perspective to offer, or you have really valid information, then you could easily deliver it in a cool, calm, collected manner, and it would give your argument that much more credibility.
Yep. Where's your grievance, bro? Put it down on the page. Leave it out of the insult arena.
All right, and even me, if I do have some message to send to somebody or get back to somebody, or if someone does email me, I might sometimes think about it, write it down, and then oftentimes I might even wait until the next day, and then I'll go, yeah, you know, you're better to approach it this way. It gives me that time to think and bring some clarity, because it's true. You can react, and you can get into that fight mode, and especially when you're attacked. That's the other thing, is if you're the one being attacked, oftentimes you're just like, well, no, that's not true, blah, blah, and you get right back in there, and funny enough, they just pulled you into the realm where they wanted you. And so it's oftentimes, I would recommend just take that time, take that moment, you know, process it, realize that this person is probably just needing to spew some trash, and you just happen to be the guy in the way, and then maybe you can respond intelligently, or just decide not to respond at all. That's even better.
A lot of this culture, I think, goes back to the early forums. Well, even the forums today, from what I understand. I was a forum moderator for 4 years, and I have to say that human nature exhibited itself in full spectrum in the time that I was a forum moderator, because the interactions that go on there run the full range of human emotion, and people generally tend to, again, to not exhibit a whole lot of self-control. What you said about, I might write this and then put it, not send it right away, you know, there's no retrieve button on email. Just like when you drop a letter in a postal box, theoretically, you're not getting it back. And a lot of us blurt things out, as Vinny was talking about. But I actually have a folder on my computer that holds my drafts, and I had to clean that out a few months ago, and I had hundreds of drafts of emails that I never sent because I had learned during my time as a forum mod to basically withhold my immediate gut response and be more considered about what I was going to say to people and not in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, it's wise advice, because you always fly off the handle. You have the tendency of, like, I have this one person who emails me constantly, always really, really disrespectful and insulting me, while claiming that they're all about trying to help. and saying that they're a really good fan and whatnot. And just so irritating. It's like, junk mail folder. And it's, the emails still keep coming through. I go, okay, let's try a redirecting thing so that any time when his email comes up, it'll redirect into a junk mail folder. That doesn't work either. I try and bounce the emails. They bounce back. I try to reply to the emails. They bounce back. So there's this one way, this unstoppable tide of smarmy abuse and annoying Shiite Muslim coming at me, and I can't stop it, bro. I can't stop it.
Oh, man. Yeah, I know. There can be a lot of annoying people out there. And another thing, though, is that we just have to have patience. I mean, guys like us, we're out there just putting, I look at it almost like sales. I mean, I kind of grew up in a sales background, and some of the brutal jobs I had to have as a salesman, I hated it.
That's brutal.
You got to pretty much sell your soul, and but at the end of the day, and they teach you basic mind control techniques, by the way, and basic hypnotism and everything else, which is pretty interesting. But one thing I did learn. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, they'll teach you very advanced mind control techniques if you're in sales long enough. You will learn how to manipulate people.
Oh, that's the whole game. Get them to buy something that they don't need. That's the whole thing. But one thing that I learned is that they have this methodology of, well, you just got to move along. So if you're doing cold calls, if you're out there pitching your stuff and you get the no's and you've tried all your rebuttals and it doesn't work, move on to the next one. And you have to be able to do it without taking it personally, without having those emotional, oh, darn, that person said no to me. You have to be good at rejection when you get into that kind of field of work. And I've tried to apply those skills to, you know, doing this type of work and just saying, look, and I'm not talking about hypnotizing people and using mind control techniques, but what I'm talking about here is just understanding that what we're trying to do is just put information out there, and people can take it and they can leave it. It's really up to them, and you're looking for those people not so that you can get them to buy into your way of viewing things, but what for me, I'm looking for those people that are open enough to at least consider these things, because we have to consider it now, folks. I mean, things are just going down this, and we're heading off the cliff at this point. We've been approaching the cliff up to this point. We're now actually walking off the end of the cliff. So we have to start thinking outside the box if we're going to have solutions to these things. So what I do is I put it out there, and you get positive responses from some people. Other people, you get no responses, but who knows, you may have had an effect. And then those other people, you get those negative responses, but you can't let it take it personally. You got to roll with it and just move on forward. That's my philosophy anyways.
Yeah. A good friend of mine, Catherine Smith, who does the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine, told me that you got two very important rules. Don't take yourself too seriously, and don't take what other people say about you personally.
Yeah. No, it's perfect advice. Like, you have to, because otherwise, I think that's why a lot of people don't last in this field. And they don't last as radio show hosts or journalists or anybody that's trying to get out there and make a difference here. They don't last because they do just that. They take it personally and they let it get to them. And ultimately, when we're talking about empowerment and the whole basis of all of this, you know, first and foremost, you have to sort of put your own oxygen mask on, so to speak. You have to do that. You have to empower yourself. You have to believe in yourself. You have to have that confidence because you're going to face an onslaught of resistance. I mean, what was that old saying? I think it was Mark Twain. It was like, you know, a lie makes it around the world before the truth can even get its boots on, right? So if your thing is truth and you want to know what's real and you want to know what's going on, expect resistance. It's built into the matrix. So, I mean, you're like the white blood cell. You're the antibody. And, you know, so when you're out there doing that and you get that negativity, you have to be an empowered person and you have to let it just roll off your back because otherwise you're not going to be effective.
I like the white cell metaphor. They're fewer than the red cells, first off, and yet they do the critical job because they are basically what battles the infections. And in a lot of ways, you know, when we're doing this, and I don't take it personally, mainly because most of these people don't know me, have never met me, have no position from which to evaluate my life. And I'm the same way. So I don't know what it is. It's vibrational. It's friction. Some people fixate, but it's not personal. It really is just part of kind of what we do as communicators.
Yeah, and if you're going to go striking out against all these random people who strike from their lounge chairs at you, I mean, it's like furiously punching at shadows and mist. You're never actually going to accomplish anything, but you are going to tire yourself out.
Yeah, that's a great metaphor, actually. And I, funny enough, I just right before the show, I literally just got home and I had just stepped off the mat. I was doing a bit of training tonight, and my mindset was there. So the fact you brought that up, Vinny, was perfect because in the field that I work in, you as a martial artist, as somebody that's learning the art of self defense, or if I got people that do competition, they do like, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu or mixed martial arts or kickboxing or whatever. And, you know, you're going to sustain some damage in that fight, mm-hmm. even whether it's a real situation or whether it's sport, guaranteed you're going to sustain some damage. The real fighters, the real success, the people that are successful in this art specifically are the ones that know how to continue through that, that know how to transcend that and to actually eventually turn that into a weapon. And turn the attack of that opponent into your own defense and into your own weapon. And I very much think, always back to that when I'm looking at this particular work that we're doing, is that if you can roll with the punches, if you can take some someday and then give some back another day, and trust me, in this fight against this monstrosity of a system that we face, we're going to take a lot more hits than we're actually going to deliver. And that's just a fact. It's just the way it is. Odds are stacked against us. Doesn't mean it's impossible. Doesn't mean we're pessimistic. It just means you have to have the heart of a fighter. You have to be able to get back up again and lace on those gloves and get back at it. And that's another thing. You have to have a little bit of a fight in you. And if you don't have it, then you're walking in the wrong territory, in my opinion.
Often you need to use your enemy's energy and motion against them, like in judo. You know, somebody comes at you, all you do is roll back and you let him go all the way over the top of you and end up flat on his back. And I found that some of the easiest ways to expose people's scumbaggery is you just let them attack you, and then you pick apart their attacks like you're dissecting a frog, and you make it look absolutely terrible for them. They're their own worst enemy.
Oh, it's a great point. It's a great analogy. And that throw I think you're talking about is, they call it stomach throw or tomoe nagi. It's a very good reversal. It's a great analogy. And the same principle is there where you are taking that energy. So if we're getting this negative energy, we're getting these attacks, realize that they're swinging wild. They're opening themselves up. They're laying everything behind, everything they got, which is leaving them open. And it doesn't mean you have to get in there and pick them apart and cause them to question their entire existence. It just means you can use that ferocity of those attacks, and you can be the calm center, and you can let that flow and just flow with it. And many times I found, even in conversation where I've had people like in my face, so upset at me for suggesting that the government lied to them about JFK. And of course, those conversations came up recently because of the anniversary. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just to suggest it, just to say, well, what they told you, it wasn't a lone gunman, you know, and they're like, oh, come on. And they just get in your face. you know, use that and just say, okay, calm down. Let's talk about this. And I always try to bring it back to the facts. And I say, are you aware of this? And are you aware of that? You just bring up little things, not too much. Don't blast them with an entire combination of facts and information to the point where they're just like, okay, I'm walking away. Just little tiny things to get them to think about it. Because at the end of the day, I also don't want them to just start believing what I'm telling them. At the end of the day, we're trying to inspire people to go out and ask these questions themselves and go and look into this. So we got to sort of be able to plant the seed, but we've got to be a little more effective at that, I think.
I think both of you who are hosts and people who are activists are very good at this. The idea that is not to dump a bucket load of information on somebody's head because they can't process it, but to ask the right question or put the right point out there. And, you know, this is really where you have to be somewhat intuitive. What is the single nugget you can drop on somebody that may provoke them, but will stick with them long enough that they may come back later and think about it, and hopefully not piss them off at the same time? And, you know, I've come to the conclusion that even though I could give them detailed information, I will usually give them something that may cause them to ask more questions.
Apparently, there's no cure for curiosity. And once you inspire curiosity in somebody, you got them. You know? You got to get them to ask those questions. And it's not like, okay, ask me this question. Ask me. Because then you just sound like a douche. You got to somehow inspire their curiosity. Who is this person before me? What is their interest? Are they a religious person? Are they a former Marine? Are they a car mechanic? You know, there's all sorts of different ways to communicate with varying different careers and peoples from different countries and how they'll take things. And the problem is you can't really talk to any two people the same way and have them hear the same message. So it becomes very much an experimental kind of three sheets to the wind. I'm going to try, but I honestly don't know if I'm going to be effective sort of thing.
Oh, great analogy. And man, Vinny, bringing up curiosity, that's what got me started in this. It wasn't in the beginning that I wanted to go out and expose some nefarious agenda. It was that I was curious about, first of all, the big questions. Who am I? Why am I here? Where the hell is the world headed? And how did this all get to be this way? It starts there. And then you start getting little information. You go, oh, hey, that was kind of odd. That was a little bit odd. I'm curious. I'm going to go investigate that a little bit more and look behind the curtain a little bit more. And again, it does come back to curiosity. And if you can inspire that curiosity in people, they'll take it and run with it on their own. And I think that's really what we have to do. And that being said, guys, we have our second break. We're going to be heading into hour number two. First hour flew by. And so, folks, don't go anywhere. Be back in a few minutes. Stay tuned.